I spent the summers of my erstwhile youth in the Republic of Waiheke. No traffic lights, still no traffic lights. No fast food, still no fast food. No television, lots of television now. Not many adults, and lots of time. It was there on isolated beaches, surrounded by surf, pohutukawa, and friendship, I learnt the prayerful art of making fire. There can be something quite beautiful and holy about a fire at night on the beach. What is holy? How do we know it to be holy? Are some places, words, actions, and thoughts always sacred? Like most of us, I call it as I feel it. I can walk into a church and feel nothing holy. It's just a big barn with a bunch of chairs. I can also walk into a barn and feel something holy. An arena of hay, animals, and dung was and still can be the nativity scene. The ordinary can be extraordinary. Moses, a young fugitive from the law and from himself, came upon a burning bush. He could have grabbed a bucket of sand and doused it, muttering to himself about kids who play with matches. He could have got out his bedroll and barbecue kit and settled down for a nice desert evening. Instead, he saw the fire as holy. He saw the ordinary fire as extraordinary. The holy does not respect our boundaries of place and time. It doesn't wait until we're in church or feeling good. Experiences of the numinous, of awe and wonder, happen on beaches and deserts, in kitchens, bedrooms, and boardrooms, in churches, mosques, and synagogues. No place or time has a monopoly on sacredness. St. Matthew's is one of the few neo-Gothic churches in this country. Here, generations of people have experienced something holy. When you talk to people, though, even if they can articulate what they mean by holy, it is not consistent. One person will experience the windows as holy, another the welcome as holy, another the communion. The mystery and power move us in different ways at different times, and sometimes we're not moved at all. A few weeks back, I was at the annual Robin Hood Foundation dinner here at St. Matthew's. The pews and parishioners were gone, replaced by dinner tables and guests. The foundation, which encourages businesses to invest creatively in social enterprises, particularly geared to those in poverty, was handing out accolades and awards. The Bank of New Zealand, for example, was applauded for their involvement in preventing violence in the home, and the House of Travel for their relationship with Hospice New Zealand. We sponsored the event. There is something fundamentally holy about compassion, thinking creatively about fighting poverty and rewarding those who do. There can also be built a communion amongst those committed to caring for others. Last Friday night, there was another event hosted here, with tables, food, and wine. It was PricewaterhouseCoopers Emerging Artists. Music and conversation were on the menu. This was not a charity event. Yet was the holy absent? In talking, listening, laughing, is there not always the possibility that God might show up? Are the sacred and secular neat categories that we can lock God in and lock others out? Every moment has the potential for holiness. Every place has the potential for holiness. Within every person is the holiness of God, ready and waiting to guide us in ways of love, justice, and joy. God doesn't just fraternize with nice people or church people or righteous, upstanding people. As I listened afresh this week to the Lucan story of Jesus and the woman afflicted by degenerative osteoporosis, I heard again this struggle over who, what, and when is holy. In many cultures, there seems to be a holiness continuum. Up one end are the saints, and down the other are the scumbags. The saint's end tends to be dominated by those who follow a rigorous spiritual discipline, and the scumbag end by those who seemingly don't have much discipline at all. Unfortunately, such continuums have historically pushed the sick, the poor, and the dissenters down towards the scumbag end, and those who keep the rules up towards the saint end. We need to understand this Lucan story, deliberately characterizing two diametrically opposed understandings of holiness. In that sense, it's using stereotypes. It would be most inappropriate, in fact, offensive, if we were not to see this and to start characterizing Jewish leaders and Judaism on the basis of this story. Jesus has an evolving understanding of holiness that makes him wary of presuming. Something in his Jewish background and experience has alerted him to the broader truth that God and holiness are found in the little, the meek, the mediocre, and the marginalized. Holiness is amongst the impure. Holiness is not limited to certain people and places. Holiness can happen at a party, like at Cana, be evident in a Roman soldier, or a person of heathen faith, like a Samaritan, or a woman of ill repute. Piety, on the other hand, made Jesus puke. Of course, God can be found in all sorts of places. God can be found amongst the high and mighty, as well as the low and slimy, in community meetings and backyards, committees and ball games, cathedrals and brothels, niggling, nudging, and agitating. God can even be found in the Sydney Diocese, and in the words of Bishop John Spong, whom they banned last week. God is not hemmed in by our preconceptions, but is out and about, splashing the world with iconoclastic irreverence and courageous love. Jesus calls the woman with osteoporosis a daughter of Abraham. He calls her an insider, a follower of the faith, whereas society had called her an outsider and had reshaped her with their prejudice. Jesus calls her into community and well-being, and he does it on the Sabbath. Another heir of Abraham objects, "Look, Jesus, we all like a healing mate, but this is the Sabbath. Couldn't you have waited until tomorrow?" And Jesus quips, "Well, animals need water on the Sabbath." "Sorry, Jesus," he might have replied, "it's not a good argument. Animals need water to survive. The woman could have waited until tomorrow." But this argument, like a number of biblical arguments, is not really about what the texts definitively say. It's about where the heart lies. The objector, a gatekeeper of holiness, wanted compassion and kindness to fit within the rules. Jesus, however, wasn't keen on those rules. Holiness happens when it happens, where it happens, amongst whom it happens. We can't stop it, but we can choose not to recognize it or support it. texts and traditions, valuable and cherished as they are, can be used to try to lock God in and lock so-called undesirables out. In many parts of the Anglican world today, women and gays are locked out of leadership. In many places, tight controls are placed around those who receive sacraments like baptism, communion, and marriage. In many places, church buildings can only be used for authorized worship, and Robin Hood wouldn't be welcome. I return to the fire on the Waiheke beach. It's warm there, a place rich with memories. I can't deny the holiness of those encounters. I cannot deny that God was there as much as God is here. I can't deny that in the friendships of those moments, there was something holy and precious. Sacred and secular are different from each other, but not fixed categories with definitive boundaries. I know this because I have experienced a God who dances and flits where she wills, totally disregarding any fences I've tried to erect and giggling at my attempts.